Hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And we're back with episode 117 of Destroy All Culture with me, Adam P. Nave, and of course, Aiden Morgan, as always.
Ooh, yep, think we're about ready to rock steady. That too is from the Chemical Brothers, back with another one of them block rockin' beats. I'm just keeping up a theme.
Everyone right now, go get your cassette recorder so you can record the new hit single before we play it. We'll be able to talk over the opening of the song so that your recording is meaningless and terrible.
Yes. Perfect.
We're old. We have jokes about old people.
Yeah, that's right. We're getting in our station wagons and driving around the block.
Oh, with a megaphone,
giving out jokes, shouting out jokes for by and for
so,
old people.
I had this weird dream the other day. Seriously, this actually happened. I wasn't planning on talking about this, but the getting in our station wagons reminded me of it. Where I was with some friends, and like we're just wandering around type of thing, you know, and end up in like this like there's a toy swap. Like a comic and toy swap that happens in town every now and then.
Uh-huh.
Like once a month. And for some reason, like, we were going there. And
sure.
One of the things I was just like, and I had no money. I remember I was really upset. And I had no money because they had this, like, rare, limited edition, wood panel, station wagon Batmobile. And I just, like, visually, I just picture it in my head still. And I was just like, oh my god, I need this in my life. Like, I don't know what the fuck this dream was about, but it was just like, wood panel station wagon Batmobile is a thing.
I would love that idea. I would love the idea of like 70s dad Batman.
Exactly.
Just, you know, don't make me turn this car around.
Right.
We will, Robin. I swear, we will go right back to the Batcave.
You make one more holy whatever joke. Anyway, so the everything is in full swing and everything is crazy and there's too much TV to watch.
I know, it's
that's
it,
end of podcast.
Nuts. That's right. We're done forever. Ever. And also for this week. No, we're not done. We're gonna keep on going. Keep on talking. We went from sort of basically just going over, you know, Killjoys, which, you know, was great. And went on Earp to just being sort of flooded.
Yeah.
Flooded, I say. With these pop culture properties.
So, let's start with one I know you didn't watch. I just want to talk about kind of briefly.
Sure.
But Arrow started up this last week. Whereas, you know, all the other, except for, like, Legends, like, they kind of staggered them a little bit.
Yeah.
Arrow came back this week, and it's doing something new?
Really?
I mean, for the most part, it's an episode of Arrow, right? Like, it's not terrible.
Right.
It's Arrow. Like, you know by now if you like the show or not. I kind of like it. And they're actually, it's kind of fascinating right now because of the way they upset the board at the end of the season. They're not just washing it all away.
Oh, nice.
You know, always in prison. Everyone else is retired because they all agreed to retire.
Mm-hmm.
So they all have new jobs. It's a thing.
Oh, nice.
But instead of flashbacks this year, they're doing flash forwards.
Oh, they're pulling a Lost, are they?
That's what everyone is saying. Like, everyone's like, oh, look, they're doing the Lost thing. I'm like, yeah, they're flash forwards. So I'm curious to see how that works out for them, because they've said apparently, like, they're going to do this for the remainder of the show. Like, every season now, this is their new thing.
Oh, okay.
And of course, when you have a show in a universe that's already done, like, you know, Flashpoint, and look at this with, like, Legends, like, we've changed the time, the time stream, so that, like, this future that we're in doesn't happen anymore, you have to wonder what the point is.
Yeah, the idea of, like, the consequences and such kind of,
like, Flash itself is this season, its main, like, through-line plot, besides the big bad villain thing, is changing the future.
Yes. Exactly.
Meanwhile, in Arrow, they're like, here's our totally gonna happen future. I'm like, come on! It's a weird
look
exercise.
Look right over there, motherfuckers. Yeah,
and like, this way you can see how things are going to pay off, and be like, we can hide hints like, you know, something will happen, and then you'll see in the future, like, how that pays off. And I'm like, yeah, but will we? Because...
See, I'm not interested unless, you know, they just go really big. Like, in all the flash forwards, like, Oliver is, like, a head in a jar or something.
Well, so far we've had one, you know, we've had, like, one shot of this, because there's only one episode. And the flash forwards, like, it's this guy who we don't know, who looks like he's, like, in his 20s. And he's convincing this boat captain to take him somewhere, and then you see it's taking him back to the island.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And I was
sake.
Like, oh, God. And then it turns out...
Sorry, I was going to make a joke that, like Ollie and the entire gang are, like, in the flash forwards, are going on a family summer vacation to the island.
Well,
that was my joke.
Well, it turns out it's William, his kid.
Oh, okay.
Who's now grown up, who's going to the island where he finds Roy Harper.
Oh.
Who's, like, now older Roy Harper, and it's like... Obviously, that's all we know. But I was just like, really, guys? Can we not just, like, how much did you really pay for that set?
Assuming a lot.
Just, like, at this point, like, unless they run into the fucking minnow, I don't care about the island.
You know, I have a theory about this.
Yeah.
I think there's an actual film crew stranded on an island. And they can send footage out, but they can't get off the island. So they're like, well, as long as we're here, we might as well shoot here.
I would believe that at this point.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's why I just wanted to let you know, like, you know, not only are they now doing flash forwards, which look at us, we're interesting, but they're they're doing the fucking island again.
You know, okay, that's irritating. I don't give a shit about that island.
Right.
I stopped giving a shit about that island in like season two.
I stopped giving a shit about the island like season one, but but also Wild Dog Renee continues to be the most interesting character on the show.
Oh, okay, that's good.
His little runner of a plot is just the most interesting thing I think so far. So there's that. There you go, Arrow.
I'm glad. I'll be caught up on Arrow.
I
don't really care
whatever.
About any of this so far except for Legends of Tomorrow, frankly.
Right.
That's... After that teaser.
Yeah, I'm enjoying Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
actually,
only been,
no,
like,
I should
one
say.
Episode, but...
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying that. Although I'll be honest. Also, after having seen the season two premiere of Black Lightning, I also care about Black Lightning because
yes.
It just holy crap! Did it ever come out of the gate screaming?
Yeah, no, and the second episode is just as good. With one weirdness. That
okay.
I don't want to ruin. It was just a name choice.
Oh, okay. I will watch it for myself. So
yeah. No. And when you hit this name, you're gonna do the same thing I do, which is like, really? That's the name you went with? It's not even a comic book thing. It's just a weird choice for a name. But no, it's still just a great show. You know, Flash is still having fun. Supposedly,
yeah.
In episode 3, we're gonna get a Wells. But, like, apparently the Wells we're getting is a brand new Wells, at least for a while, that's, like, patterned after, like, he's the universe's Sherlock Holmes.
Okay.
Like, I think he's called even, like, Sherlock Wells or something.
Oh, my God.
yeah. But, like, you know, you don't know if you can actually trust him, is their whole thing this year. Like, he might be a bad guy. And I'm like, just give us Wells. Shut up.
We don't need complications. We don't need further inventions. We just need Harrison Wells.
Right.
I think this season of Flash so far, I've watched the first two episodes. The weirdest thing is the fact that Chris Klein appears to be getting work. Like he's playing guy with jagged looking dagger.
Cicada.
Thank you. I was trying to remember his name. Could not remember, so came up with guy with weird looking dagger guy.
Yeah, that's, you know, accurate.
Accurate. Yeah. Who is Cicada in the comics? I mean, I'm assuming he's a comics guy.
Yeah, he is. He's one of the he's one of those Speed Force type villains.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember which one he is. Like, he can absorb, like, the life force from other people.
Uh-huh.
So,
something
like, he's,
that's
like, really old, and he has, like,
occult. Oh.
And he was trying to murder, I think, everyone who Flash had saved. And that's really it. Like, he's just a serial killer who feels he's linked to the Flash somehow because he, you know, was hit by lightning and now has this weird power. And is trying to, like, resurrect his dead wife and, like, a whole thing. They are obviously not doing this.
I mean, it seems like not.
Yeah.
The thing I would like to point out is that cicadas don't that sort of insect sound that cicada is making. Cicadas don't make that sound like actual cicadas. They rub their legs together to produce that sort of crickety, high-pitched
Right.
noise.
And I don't know why he was ever called Cicada.
Right. Maybe he's been named after John Cicada, and it's not at all the
Maybe. It just
insect.
it never made sense to me because I'm like, cicadas aren't immortal. I don't know what's happening here.
It's like somebody like had like really bad information about cicadas and
But
was
like
like,
again,
you
like
know
the you know, the Savitar in the comics is a very different thing than what they did in the show. So
Fair enough.
I actually really liked the Savitar arc in the comics. It was kind of awesome.
Really?
Yeah, because the Savitar could steal Speed Force.
Okay, I like
Like, he's
that.
a different guy, and he has his own little cult, and he could steal Speed Force, and, like, the whole arc starts with, like, he has Speed Force ninjas, because he can
Oh,
also move
nice.
Speed Force around. So he's kind of collecting it and then giving it to other people, like his little minions. And the whole thing is, like, they have Speed Force, but they keep dying. Like, it burns them out, and also, they're
Oh.
not good at it. Like, it's one of those things of, like, you know, when the Flash has his Speed Force thing, he also thinks at that speed.
Oh,
But the way
okay.
Savitar was giving it to them, they
Oh.
could just move that fast. So they do things like just kill it, like run into highway signs type of thing, you know?
Oh, that is delightful.
But it actually has one of the great, like, the first time you have it happen is, and it's Wally, obviously, and you know, Linda are, like, having coffee at this outdoor cafe. And, like, mid-sentence, she suddenly slows down and Wally's like, what the hell? And then he realizes that his body leapt into, like, speed mode because there was a threat. And suddenly he could see these ninjas because he couldn't see them at normal speed.
Oh,
And he's
neat.
just like, what, there are ninjas? And so he has this entire fight, like, that no one can even see happen.
That's great.
Yeah, I love it when they used to do that stuff in the comics, where it's just like, sometimes the super speed fights happen between seconds for other people.
Right.
And they don't really do that in the show because it would just, you can't use the rest of the cast.
This is true. Oh, by the by, I gotta say I don't know if I mentioned this on our last podcast, but I think my favorite moment from the Flash season premiere
Yeah.
is close to the end when they say when they're trying to find a place for Nora to stay,
Oh,
and
yes.
they find the lounge and there's Joe just sitting there. It's like, how long have you known about this place? I've been napping here since day one.
Yeah.
It's just the look like, oh, damn it. This is the only place I can get away from you people. I just it was a great moment.
Yeah, no, it was a great little bit. Oh, trying to think, what else has gone on with stuff? Oh, so, you know, they canceled Iron Fist like a week or two ago.
Right.
Netflix did, and just recently they canceled Luke Cage.
They canceled Luke
And of
Cage.
course, everyone's like, you know, well, it's obvious they're moving these shows to Marvel streaming. And I personally don't think that that's it,
Is
just
it?
because the original
Yeah.
deal was that they co-own the show, so Netflix would have to agree to that.
Right,
Now, are
exactly.
they killing off the shows? Like, but again, it's Netflix's decision, so why would they do it? But the bit that people seem to be missing is that the original deal had an unspecified number of episodes. Like, there was some limit that no one, that wasn't public, that
Oh,
Netflix could
okay.
do however they wanted. Like, they could do Defenders, they could do Jessica Jones, whatever it is, but they only have so many episodes. And so it's
Gotcha.
A, are they running short? And it's also just B, are they just wrapping up because they figure that Marvel doesn't want to do this anymore anyway? You
Yeah.
know? And I don't know. I mean, again, they could be a Heroes for Hire show. But I do think that, like, 3 seasons, like, Daredevil's doing its third season now, Jessica Jones is filming its third season. I think Punisher's supposed to come back for a second one.
I think so, yeah.
And it could just be the, you know what, we've done like 3 seasons of these shows, we get a lot of views, but people are slowly, like, watching. 'Cause I think they've noticed that a lot of people I talk to, and like me, myself, like, haven't been finishing the seasons.
That is correct, yeah.
And so I do wonder how much of it is just as much as people think that like they're these really popular shows, they're not.
This is possible.
Like they were, but nowadays it's like maybe we're just winding down because everything needs an endpoint.
Yeah, and I think also the shows, I mean, I think they're probably pretty expensive shows, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, the trouble is, of course, that Netflix is so opaque that it's really hard to know why they make the decisions they make. And when you start getting other companies like Disney involved, that then it's like, what? Who knows why they do what they do? It is a shame. I'm not particularly. I wasn't particularly upset that Iron Fist was being canceled, even though I did finish the season and was looking forward to more. I am a little more bummed that Luke Cage was canceled, but hopefully, like you say, we'll get Heroes for Hire. Hopefully, we'll get Daughters of the Dragon. Who knows? If these
If
things
this is
happen,
all we
I will be
get, it's
very happy.
okay. And that being said, I have watched the first four episodes of Daredevil.
Derp Devil.
And it's not bad. Like, it has all the problems and all the goodness of Daredevil, if that makes sense. But it feels more like season one than season two.
Yes, that's. I mean, I have. I'm watching episode one right now, and yeah, I can say with great confidence that it does feel a lot more like season one. I mean, I was just happy to see that, we start off with Matt Murdock being sort of like deaf in one ear and sort of essentially disabled, and actually beginning to like heal by the middle of the episode, instead of, say, dragging it out 3 or 4 episodes,
Yeah, I think it
which,
takes like 2 or 3 episodes to get him back to like
full fighting trim.
full-ish fighting strength. And he's gone back to like just the black outfit.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I mean it's good stuff, and of course D'Onofrio as Fisk is still so good.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I mean I am enjoying it. And again, like I like Luke Cage's stuff. And again, I like the first season more than the second for the most part.
And I
The
like
Iron
the
Fist
first
second
half of the
season was
first
better.
season. What's that?
Iron
Oh,
Fist season
yes.
2 was better, but
It
I
was a
do think
lot
that
better.
going back to what like the season 1 of Daredevil, like that kind of feel, is what made these shows. And I think it's the only character in this set that really feels like it earns the complete grimness. Like Jessica Jones, like the first season totally did, but then you're like, all right, can we lighten up just a little bit and just like we did with Defenders, and it works. But they didn't. And again, like you can lighten up Daredevil as well, but for whatever reason, like that's the thing that has that tone, I think, a little bit more inherent for a longer period of time. I don't know. But yeah, no, and episode 4 at least has this huge, it has yet another like huge single shot action scene that's like 11 minutes long. Single shot, and it actually has like a break point in it, which is fascinating because it doesn't feel unearned. It doesn't feel like it paused. It's just there's a conversation kind of in the middle that makes sense to have a conversation in the middle. And it's a good scene.
Oh,
But
nice.
it
I was
didn't
thinking
have the
maybe they
weight of
stopped
the
to get
first one.
churros. Doesn't have the weight. Well, I mean that first one, I mean, felt. I mean, it was kind of. I hesitate to use the word. Felt a little revolutionary, just because it was so grueling.
Right, and this one kind of was too, but I think for me it didn't have the weight of it in that, that first one was like, well, will he save this kid or not?
Yes,
And this
exactly.
one was just, will he get out of this building or not? So, he is.
That's a good point. Yeah, the stakes need to be high, but they need to be the ones that don't necessarily, kill the show, right?
Right. But again, it was still like, an impressive feat of a shot. And because it was actually it is just like Matt Murdock, like there's no outfit. There's nothing
Right.
covering his face. So I don't know where they had a stunt double in there for him or if that was all him. Like in the original one, you could see where they switched out occasionally and all this. But this one just there's like 1 or 2 bits where maybe, but it looked like it was 95% actually just the actor, which is an interesting thing.
Neat. I noted. One thing I'm going to say about before I forget.
Yeah.
One thing that annoyed the hell out of me in the first episode of Daredevil is Matt Murdock misreading the Book of Job
Yeah.
in a very particular way, because he says talks about. Well, I mean, it's. I mean, part of the way that he uses it, but also he says, Job, was visited by all these plagues and stuff, but he wouldn't curse God. But that's not. That is actually a misreading of that line, because curse does not mean what we think it means. I mean, curse in the context of the Book of Job actually means more like bless. So when Job's wife keeps on saying curse God and let's get over it, be done with it, it doesn't mean that. She says do your duty and move on, not express your rage and move on.
Right.
So when I saw that, I'm like, ah, the writers kind of they. They just didn't do their research.
Well, but I
All they
wonder
had
if
to
they actually
do,
did though, because I mean, and we see later that like Matt's whole grounding Christianity is weirdly flawed.
it is flawed, but I don't think it was flawed, and I think it was a thing that they just didn't know.
That's fair. I'm not sure, and I was reading it as just like, oh, Matt took the wrong thing from this.
Yeah,
So.
it's true. He also did take the wrong thing. I think you're
Right.
right about that.
No, I think yeah, I think it's somewhere between the two problems. So yeah. What else happened here?
I was gonna say with actually, I want to talk a little. I mean,
Yeah.
because I just
Yeah,
saw
please.
Black Lightning, I do want to talk a little bit about that because it's fresh on my mind. One of the things I actually, it's funny because ever like I've seen headlines talking about the sort of like big knockdown drag 'em out, one shot fight scene in the season of Daredevil.
Yeah.
But there is a pretty outstanding fight scene, hallway style fight scene in Black Lightning, and more interesting because and this is doing the wrong thing or
Yes.
perhaps the right thing when of course she's basically raising money to help the kids in the pods by stealing money from drug dealers, and it's sort of like, wow, that's a weird gray area.
Yeah, no, I really like the fact that Black Lightning is not afraid to go there.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's one of those things where, I mean, if she were to go to her father and say, "Hey, look, here's what I've been doing," he would be like horrified and angry. At the same time, I mean, you're taking, blood money and using it for a better purpose, and you know that's coming. You know this particular conversation is coming somewhere down the line, and obviously, this is probably just the beginning of Anissa's sort of gray area. So,
Well, it's the
which
show's
you
gray
didn't,
area even more is what I'm saying. Like
yeah,
it's very, very specifically like, and when you see episode two, you'll see what I'm saying.
oh, okay,
That they are playing with gray area with more than just her.
okay, nice. All right, I will definitely. I am looking out for
What'd you
that.
think of the title card thing?
At first I was like, oh, this is cool, and then I thought, I can do that in After Effects.
Well, sure.
And so to a certain extent I was a little bit sort of like, oh yeah, okay, I see that. But I mean, I thought it looked really great. I'd love to see more of same, like coming up, like more variations on that for upcoming episodes.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be the same title card it was for
Okay,
two.
that's cool. All right,
That, like, we
that's
have a
cool.
season name now, you know, the Book of whatever it is, Consequences.
Book of Consequences, yeah.
And then every chapter has its
Yeah.
name. So, but they're using the same graphics. So yeah, I feel like it's a new concept that they didn't push too hard.
No, I find it interesting that they have that, and then they have the little sort of actual title graphic later on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought, but that's this is kind of, it's a level of stylization that I'm really enjoying. Also, the fight between Kara, the spotter, and Cyanide at the
Oh,
beginning.
jeez.
Bitch, you got my hair wet.
Did this have the end bit with her? I think it was the first episode.
When she confronts
The whale?
Tobias,
Yeah.
yeah, the whale, yeah,
Okay,
and
because can I just say that like that was one of the weirdly like most horrific moments I've seen on TV?
Yeah.
Her reaction. I mean, and it was honest. I mean, it was perfectly honest, right? Like, you know, she gets harpooned in the stomach, but just her reaction and that scream, I was just like, holy, what the hell? Like, is this like allowed at this rating? And it wasn't gory, it wasn't anything else, but it was just, there was something in just her, like that ongoing scream and her reaction that was just legitimately terrifying.
Yes, I totally agree. That was like, that's exactly what I thought. I was like, are we allowed to see this? But also on Netflix, because I watched it on Netflix, they dropped the N word.
Yeah.
I don't know if they did that in the network.
Yes.
I was like, wow, that's how much negotiation do they have to do to make that happen?
Yeah, you kind of wonder.
Like how? But it brings me to the other thing I was thinking, is that Black Lightning, at least as far as I'm concerned, is doing a better job than any other of these sort of properties of taking real-world concerns and actual politics and whatnot, and sort of putting them into like the superhero science fiction context, without trivializing or sort of, you know, or anything like that. They're really nailing that, and that's really good to see. And the concerns and the moral framework seems uniquely sort of African American, in a way that other shows just don't get. So it's really refreshing for me to see that.
No, it has a point of view. It has something to actually say.
Yeah.
And that's nice in this.
Yeah.
Just because, it's something you don't always see.
And you get some Marvin Gaye on the soundtrack towards the end there, which I was like, ooh, nice.
Yeah.
So, good soundtrack to boot. That's the other thing I always love about Black Lightning. It's always the soundtrack's always great.
Yeah, they did some Parliament.
They did? Oh, that's right. Nice. This whole thing is something I'm looking forward to. I also find the whole struggles with keeping the high school open as compelling as the sort of superhero and
superhero. And that makes a real, like I said, like that in the second episode, that really takes an interesting place. It takes it to an interesting place, and that's where that weird name happens. So keep an eye out, kids. But it's such a good show. And reportedly they are going to change up a little bit the Black Lightning costume because they're all just like, it's hard to move in.
Fair enough.
Something might happen there.
Okay. All right, so what else have we been seeing? Well, let's talk a bit about The Good Place, because we didn't even mention that last week.
We didn't mention it. I mean, and we have admitted, too, it can be hard to talk about, because it's such high-quality stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
exactly.
We were both, I think, worried, or at least I was worried, at the beginning of the season, it felt a little wobbly because we were on Earth.
Yeah, I think... and I did a little bit of thinking about that, and actually it's funny because I think the last episode kind of put all my thoughts into a cocked hat and threw them away. Because I was thinking about like the way the comedy works in the afterlife setup, mm-hmm. is that it takes the world. I mean, I think the key to the comedy in those first two seasons, I think, relies pretty much on that little frozen yogurt moment, like... When they try and you take a good thing and you ruin it just a little bit. But that's the whole notion.
It's very Twain's Letters from Earth, right? Like
precisely, yeah. But I was thinking what the demons do in what Michael does in The Good Place, is it's like Gedebor's Society of the Spectacle. It takes the world and repackages it and sells it back to you. But in this case, of course, it sells it back to you as a utopia when it's obviously not. So all the jokes kind of turn on the fact that everything is actually not what it seems to be.
Right.
So when you get to the Earth, we are actually on the Earth. You know what I mean? So all of a sudden, the sort of the the philosophical basis for the comedy no longer works in the same way. So, and I think they didn't, and I think they, for that, I think that was why it was a little wobbly.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what I thought. And then the last episode happened, and I was like, oh, okay, they were just getting up to speed with something, and now it's like.
Well, and to continue your theory, because I think that's a brilliant, you know, that's exactly what's going on, is I think this last episode took a turn, and instead of reflecting the Earth and showing you everything's not what it appears, they started shifting the comedy to the same concept with the characters.
Yes.
You know, that these are people who aren't quite what you think they are for a number of reasons, you know, that they've grown and changed. You know, we went through like a year of time type of thing. And
that's true.
And again, we've always, you know, it's one of the standard things in the show these days, where it's when they're together, they are better than the sum of their parts, and that this is how they become good people. And so this was the episode where you see that. It's the payoff to what we've been being told for like a year and a half.
I think that's exactly it. Yeah, they've sort of been saving something, and we like, and the delightful thing is like, even with all the things they throw at you, I still didn't see this one coming.
Right.
I was like,
I don't even. I try to not even guess. Like, I have a guess.
Yeah.
Like, I have a guess for either later this season or next season.
Right.
Depending on how fast they always move, that like at some point still in the show they have to go to the good place and realize that it sucks. Like, it's too perfect.
Right.
You know, whatever. Like, we still have to hit the actual good place. That's the only thing I'm like, yeah, that'll happen. Otherwise, I don't even know. I don't want to know. It's not a show that I feel comfortable. It's like Killjoys, frankly. Like, I'm not really comfortable guessing with that show because they're smarter than me. I'm just enjoying the ride.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think we have, there are at least two things that are going to pay off probably in some way down the line. One is the Michael and Janet's manifesto.
Yes.
That they write. That'll probably play in somehow. And I have to think that you can't introduce something as delightful as the Jeremy Baramy time stream and not have it work somewhere down the line.
I don't know. I mean, possibly.
Maybe it's
possibly
a throwaway.
But given that, like, in the first episode of the show, we had a here's the one guy who got it right.
Right.
And they just, that's it. Like, it's that is the kind of thing where they might just toss that off.
You never know. Yeah, it's true. But I think I can't tell you how brilliant I find the Jeremy Baramy joke.
Oh.
And I just, the more I think about it, the more I love it.
The dot on the eye, that's what broke me. Yeah, they actually one-up Doctor Who, which is not easy to do with time travel jokes.
Exactly, yeah. It's just timey-wimey. Jeremy Baramy.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, whenever we're talking about, you and I, but in general, when we seem to be talking about, you know, chaos and flux, we often go for like little timey-wimey, sort of like, you know, hurly-burly. Or, what I also like, my favorite is Tohu Bohu, which I think was used
like,
a
new
in
one.
18th and 19th, it's not used these days, 18th, 19th century stuff.
Okay.
But it comes from, I always wonder if because these, you know, because these folks are quite good, I wonder if they know this. Tohu Bohu is from Wavohu Sohu, which is the second line of Genesis. The earth was formless and void. Means chaos and flux.
Right.
So I'm just like, blah, blah, blah. Blah blah blah, chaos and flux, tohu bohu. It's there.
Yeah.
It's a linguistic trait that's with us anyway. That
I would not
that
I would
thing.
Assume that they do.
Yeah.
No, the show is almost too good. And again, like letting William Jackson Harper, like letting him stretch his wings, he really has become like holy shit. I mean, the entire cast is incredible. Don't get me wrong.
Yes.
But when they let him off like any sort of chain and just like here go insane. He is stunning every time. I also do appreciate that if you break that we now know, like if you break Chidi, he turns into Eleanor.
Yeah, pretty much.
And like that's why they work. They are the two focal points that are, you know, the worlds apart, and so are, of course, Donnie and Jason, right?
Right, because yeah, because there's a rule-bound good person beneath like Eleanor's sort of like selfish surface, and there is a ego monster beneath Chidi's like rule-bound surface.
Right, and
yeah.
Tahani kind of wishes she were Jason, like if life were just simple and I didn't have to think about it and I didn't care what anyone thought about me, and Jason
right.
kind of wishes he was Tahani.
Yes.
Like so,
yes,
they
exactly.
they create this really interesting compass.
Mm-hmm. But quite like, yeah, I like that. Also, I thought that Jamil got a great little sort of acting moment.
Mm.
Just it's when Jason says something like, "Oh, like off-brand SeaWorld," except
right.
you know we weren't killer whales, we killed a whale. She just gives him this like sort of look
yeah.
of like what, and I'm like that's. That was a great little sort of moment in the whole, in Jamil's acting repertoire. So, yeah, one of the things I enjoy is watching sort of the less experienced actors in The Good Place, learn their craft more.
Right.
And so yeah, I mean they're all good in the first place, but it's interesting to see that.
Oh, I also caught something on Netflix that might be of interest to you. CNN did these like they might have done four, but three of them at least are on Netflix in the US. Miniseries. They did like the '60s, the '70s, '80s, and '90s.
Oh, okay.
The first episode of the '70s is about TV. The first two episodes of the '80s and '90s are TV. It's like 50 minute episodes. Just because TV blew up. But they are an interesting look. Like they're kind of almost flawed. Like they skip a little bit back and forth, and there are certain things that they just leave alone, and certain things they highlight. Where I'm like, that's a weird choice. I would also have included this personally, but you know, fine. But they are actually really fascinating looks at how TV evolved over those three decades. So like just you know, just watch like those like five little episodes across these three series. Not that the rest of it isn't interesting. You know, it's. But it's, you know, political stuff, blah, blah, blah. But it's, you know, with, like, the 80s one, the 90s one, you have, like, the rise of CNN and, you know, the founding of Fox as a network. And,
oh, yes.
You know,
of
the
course.
Start of things like Donahue straight through to, like, Morton Downey Jr.
Huh.
You know, you have the sitcoms and how, like, the sitcoms in the 70s, and even through, like, a bunch of the 80s were all just, like, really family-friendly, everyone was nice to each other type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And how they start to break away from all that more and more and more.
Right. The apotheosis of that being Seinfeld.
Right. And like things like the importance of Miami Vice in ways that I'd never thought of in a weird way.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, they're fascinating little bits of documentary-ish stuff.
I tell you, I tried watching, maybe some about a year or two ago, I tried watching some Miami Vice. Like, I had seen it years ago, but I thought, oh, I'll try it again. And the pilot is really stylish. I mean, it's what you think of when you think of, like, a Miami Vice and Michael Mann stuff.
Right.
But it rapidly, like, after that, it becomes quite sort of a lot cheaper looking very quickly. I mean, it's still stylish, but you can tell that their Michael Mann is not directing all of them, or they're not pouring the same money and attention into some of the episodes.
Yeah, I mean, and it is they make the documentary makes the interesting point of like it was very much like the MTV version of what a cop show would be.
Oh,
and that's
yeah,
why they're just
definitely.
Like we could suddenly do like a 4 minute like they're just driving from point A to B, but you set it against like a Phil Collins song. And people watch it.
Yeah, sure.
And it was something that
Absolutely.
Hadn't happened before. And, like, that's just fascinating for how that, you know, the use of time and letting moments stretch in ways that, like, well, we might not have really had much of an episode.
Yeah.
Because we can afford to lose 4 minutes of footage to just them
right.
driving. But it was all style over everything else.
Right. And, I mean, frankly, any show that has G. Gordon Liddy throwing, like, a necklace of Sandinista ears onto like a conference table. I mean,
right.
that was freaking insane. That's I have no other way of describing that.
But yeah, so that happened.
yes, that happened. What else have we got? Oh, We haven't mentioned the developments on The Gifted.
It's true. We're a couple episodes in, and it see again, and like for me, it's like it's a delightful, weird little show. But all I can ever find to say is just like it's a lot of fun X-Men stuff. Like it feels like
It
an X-Men
really,
comic,
yeah. It
and
does,
it
yeah.
makes no sense half the time, but that's okay. But
Yep.
that's all it ever does. You know what I mean? Like it's not doing anything past like we're gonna make the best X-Men TV show ever without the X-Men.
Right.
And we're gonna have fun with that. So I love watching it, but you're going back to if you remember like the old days where we both used to have to like have to, where we both had a period of time where we were like writing TV review stuff.
Oh yes,
It's one of those
well,
shows like I
back when
would
we
hate
had
to
to.
have to do
Right.
because there's just not enough meat there to really be like outside of like a recap. And then this cool thing happened like to dissect. It's just it happens and it's fun when it happens.
I would like to say one thing. This is
Yeah.
not maybe no, this is not really analysis, but one thing I really enjoyed about the most recent one. I think it's episode 4 now we're up to.
Think so,
This
yeah.
is the episode in which we what's that? Where we just, yeah. The episode in which they're try it's funny in this episode I was like what is actually going on? The Inner Circle peeps are breaking into a facility that holds mutants to obviously to capture some particularly powerful mutant. We don't know who it is. But what I loved is that the entire thing, except for one scene, was all done from the perspective of the mutant underground. We usually the first three episodes we've been going back and forth between sort of Lorna and Andy in the Inner Circle and all the everybody else pretty much
Right.
as but in this one it just kept it kept like strictly to one viewpoint to the underground and it began with the effect that it treated all the views of the of like the former sort of like major allies Andy and whatnot all of a sudden they were just viewed through screens or they were just straight up enemies, and I just thought that was such a good touch. It was a level of like art that I did not think really think the
Yeah, no,
show
and
was
think about it, like you're
capable
absolutely right. Like it actually does frame the Lorna stuff especially. Like we're told all this information and we see it but only from one angle.
Yeah.
And it really does heighten the difference in what the show was to where it is now
Yeah,
in a brand new
exactly.
way. Yeah.
Yep. No, which I rather enjoyed. So I thought, well, this is, I'm like, I don't know who made that decision, or but I was like, this is one of the best decisions that you guys ever made.
Yeah.
Because I mean, because frankly, The Gifted, for all its enjoyment, often it had that thing where if you need to know something, a character would just walk up and say it. But they actually seem to take some time to show you, right? Just by
Right.
keeping other characters. I mean, it told you way more about the emotional distance between these characters now than having them go, "I don't know you anymore," or whatever else.
Yeah, no, that's a good
And
point.
yeah. So there's something to say, but by and large, yeah, it's a fun show to watch.
It is. Yeah, I don't even know. Trying to think. There was more Doctor Who, of course.
There was more Doctor. Yeah, we actually kind of missed out on talking about that last. Well, it's because our we record just before
Before it happens,
the
yeah.
episode aired. Yeah. What did you think of episode 2 of season 11?
It was a middling Doctor Who episode.
I thought so. I really enjoyed it, even though yeah, you're quite right.
Right. Like it had some good character bits
Yeah.
and figuring out who the Doctor is and the companions and all that, but it was also one of these low budget, way too busy episodes.
Yeah, I think most of their budget was probably flying everybody to South Africa to shoot. That's
Yeah,
my guess.
that was a little strange. But I also, you know that thing like where you're watching something like before you go back and think about it later, right? When you're just
Right.
watching something, you can be watching something kind of crappy, but if it has a good ending, you're like, you walk out happy. You know, like that standard rule. So, you know, the ending of the episode. I forgave everything for a minute.
Well, exactly, yeah. So I thought, and I mean, and the truth is, when it comes to middling Doctor Who episodes, there are a lot of those.
Oh God, yes.
I spent some time like, because I thought to myself, I think I'll rewatch some Doctor Who, and then I was like, oh, well, maybe not that one. Oh, not that one either. Oh my God, that one sucks. You know, I just realized how.
Oh
many
yeah, no,
of
I do
them.
That all the time when I'm like, oh, let me rewatch some Doctor Who, and I'm just like, oh. Oh, but do I really want to do this?
Yeah, exactly.
But like, that's like even some of the. Oh, sorry. I was just saying, like, even some of the middling ones, like, they always have, like, a moment where you're like, I do like this moment.
Exactly. Yeah, there's very few. I mean, there's very few episodes where that have nothing to redeem themselves. But by the by, I watched the first season, I watched the Dalek episode.
You know,
man, was that? I loved that. I'd forgotten how much I loved that episode.
That episode has a very, very subtle throwback to old Doctor Who that is one of my favorite things.
Oh, what's that?
If you want, there was a serial, a Tom Baker serial, Genesis of the Daleks.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've seen it.
I have, but man,
yeah,
it's been a long
Doctor
time.
And the companions end up back on Skaro before the Daleks are a thing.
Right. Okay.
Right
yeah,
when
okay.
Davros is, you know, starting to. Design and build the Daleks, and there's a moment in that serial where Doctor Who, where the Doctor looks into this nursery basically, and they're all like the little baby like blobs of Dalek, and he realizes like there's no real dialogue, I don't remember any, but there's that moment of realization that all he has to do is destroy that room.
Yeah.
And the Daleks stop existing. But that means killing a room full of innocent things.
Mm-hmm.
That are at that point completely innocent. And you can watch across Tom Baker's face all of that weight and all of the what do I do here flash across his face. And there's a very specific look on his face for it. That is just hauntingly brilliant. And in that episode, you know, Dalek, in that season one episode, Eccleston at one point looks at the Dalek and, like, the Dalek is all tied up and he, you know, he's angry and he gives into the anger and starts screaming at it. But when he first sees it, he mirrors that expression from Tom Baker. And if you know both halves of it type of thing, you can feel across his lives that sort of, did I actually make that wrong choice?
Wow.
And it is, like, it's worth, like, Genesis of Daleks, it's an old Tom Baker one, so you know what you're in for in terms of, like, it's not great in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no, no.
But it's worth watching it just to find that one scene, and then go back and watch the Dalek thing, and it's just, it is hauntingly brilliant.
Wow.
I don't know how much of that's intentional, except for the fact that Eccleston's Doctor was Baker. Like,
it
that
was, wasn't it? I never really thought about that, but yeah.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, Tennant was very much the Fifth Doctor. In terms of, like, what Doctor they grew up with and loved the most. You know, and nowadays, of course, like Jodie Whittaker was never a huge fan of Doctor Who growing up, so we don't have that kind of weirdness connection. But, like, for Eccleston, like, Tom Baker was his Doctor growing up, and he's spoken about that. And so I'm like, no, there's a good chance that he did that intentionally. Like, I don't think it would be in the script, but it was just... It was all on his face, and it's just this stunning bit of work that I could just never forget.
Oh, I have to see that now.
Yeah, it's worth digging up to Genesis of Daleks.
Yeah, because I remember, I have seen Genesis of the Daleks. I do not have very good memories of it. Just
no, it's not great at all.
Yeah.
And it was funny because when I first saw that episode, the Eccleston one, I had a friend who was like, who knew Doctor Who way better than me, you know, and had mentioned that, like, oh god, I think that, like, that feels like this weird echo. Like, you know, let's rent the disc off Netflix really quick and see. And so it was one of those discs that was on Netflix, you know, because back when you were doing discs from Netflix.
Right.
So I rented that serial, and I was like, okay, let's go through it, and it was like, holy shit, it really is. See, I just got lucky that, like, I knew someone who happened to catch that.
Right. Well, that's good.
But
That's because
stayed with
there's
me.
seem, huh? And it seems it's nice because there's sometimes I feel like there's not enough of a connection between the old and the new, and that's.
Davies was big into it.
Yeah, well, Davies was a huge fan of Baker Era Who.
Yeah.
There's a. I don't know if you ever watched his Queer as Folk, the UK series. There's a great moment in which the main character, I can't remember his name now. He goes home after I think being out of the club, and he sort of reaches up to like this bunch of like VHS tapes, which with all ostensibly like gay porn, and he puts one in, but it's Pyramids of Mars. Like he's hiding his love of Doctor Who, in his like, collection of
yeah,
of
I believe
porn,
it's Davies who
has
above
was,
his desk.
There's something kind of brilliant about that.
Well, I think it is Davies.
I bet you that's Davies to a T right there.
No, but I think it's Davies who has all of the original Target books.
Nope. Hello. Okay. Are we?
Let's
here?
See. I can hear you. I think we're out of sync. I don't know.
Hello.
Can you not hear me now? This is fun.
The audio is gone. Is the audio gone?
Well, we're at the 50-minute mark, and apparently Aiden can no longer hear me. So we're going to end and throw to some music and talk more about Doctor Who and all that next week. Actually, maybe the week after. And we'll go from there. Hooray! Music! Woo!